Hello and welcome to the Fastest Lap podcast, helping you to stay up to date with the fast-moving world of Formula One. Today, we talk about the sale of the Williams F1 team and preview the Belgian GP. My name is Jan, and as ever, I'm with Fergal. Hello everyone to episode 197 of the Fastest Lap podcast. To start off this episode, we want to talk about the sale of the Williams F1 team to an investment company, I think an American investment company. What's your opinion on that, Fergal?
Yeah, I mean, of course, it's great news for Williams, for Formula One. There was, I guess, a period of a few months where we weren't quite sure what the future held for Williams, but now it seems that their future in F1 is sorted. We know that they were already struggling financially even before the whole COVID pandemic and the financial and economic implications that it brought as well. So yeah, great to see that an investment company, a US investment company, has jumped in and I suppose save them, or at least given them the strength to remain stable on the grid. And then, of course, with stuff like the budget cap coming in and the new aero regulations, hopefully that will boost Williams and their prospect of getting back up the F1 ladder. And hopefully not for too long, we'll see them again fighting at the front of the grid. That's definitely their aim, because this is Williams, one of the most successful F1 teams of all time, and currently the model, the situation is that they can't do that, but hopefully this investment is one stepping stone that allows them to achieve that in the coming years.
I haven't really looked up the details on the transaction, but is it or was the team 100% sold? Like, are they now the complete and the sole owner of the team, or was it just do they have a majority stake, or are the Williams, like Frank Williams and Claire Williams, do they have still some shares into the team, or is it completely
sold? They still
sold?
Are at the helm of the team, and the Williams name will remain on the grid. I'm not really sure if that was a concern of many people. I think Williams is such a iconic and recognizable and respected name in Formula One, and to have that stick around, definitely it's a positive thing for the sport.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, it's a brand, the Williams brand, and it would be let's say stupid of the investors to drop that iconic name and not use it further, build a team around that. So yeah, as you said, good for them that it saved them and also maybe provided them with a good future. And we've seen it with other teams, like for example the Sauber team, that struggled in the last couple of years, where an investment firm, well, in that case it was that firm was linked to Marcus Ericsson, that helped out the team or bought pieces of the team. So yeah, let's hope Williams can actually build something on top of that deal and find back to strength in the next couple of years. Basically that was one of the major topics we had since we recorded our last episode. Also, we had confirmation by basically all the teams saying that they signed the new Concorde Agreement, and with that, or actually now talking about it, would you have, Fergal, do you actually have a good definition of Concorde Agreement for those who are not familiar with that term?
It basically binds all the teams to the grid. This Concord Agreement runs from 2021 to 2025, and you know, involve things such as you know, the commercial rights, TV money, etc. All this sort of stuff. It's basically the plan that all the teams are committed to over the next handful of years, and yeah, like I said, they benefit from staying on the grid. And yeah, I mean, it's good news that everyone signed up. Of course, you know, I've always said that F1 needs another team or two more teams, maybe for a 22 or 24 grid, or 22 or 24 car grid. So yeah, and I guess there maybe was a little bit of danger of potentially losing a team. In I guess the biggest danger probably came from Haas. You know, no one was really quite sure if they would stick around long term or not, given you know, the difficulties that they've had over the last couple of years. But you know, they've committed now for the next 5 years, as have Mercedes, who were stating that they weren't ready to sign the agreement days before they were supposed to. But yeah, I mean, I don't think anybody really expected Mercedes to not sign. But yeah, great news overall to have everyone in. And yeah, I guess that's just one potential headache that F1 can and the FAA can scratch off, you know, completely. Now that they have everyone up, the focus now really will be on 2022, those new regulations, and how much the field will change from now until then. Because I think, given where the sport is now, I think a lot of people are looking forward to and definitely hoping for some form of change at the front of the grid, and have at least two, if not three, maybe, you know, four teams competing on a regular basis going forward. That probably won't happen straight away, but that is certainly the aim going forward. You know, beyond that, and yeah, the Concord Agreement just ties all the teams down to the grid, and yeah, keeps them there. So hopefully we'll have them competing, or as much teams as possible competing at the front of the grid, yeah, in the next coming years.
Yeah, basically nothing to add there, as you said. Also, commercial aspects are part of the agreement, and yeah, now with the new one, of course, meaning that teams like Mercedes or Red Bull, and also Ferrari, who still have their like special status with an extra payment, they will get less money, and smaller teams will get a little bit more money, which generally is a good thing, as there are many positive feedback loops already in Formula One. So to have a bit more distribution and prize money is definitely a good thing, and also good that we have all teams committing to a long-term future there. So yeah, good definition, good explanation of the new Concord Agreement there. But you mentioned the focus is on 2022. But while you were talking, I was thinking about the 2021 season. I mean, we currently have like a year that has never been done before, and very difficult circumstances to go racing in general. And the question really is, how long will that situation continue? I mean, currently you're not really allowed to have big mass events, and if there are some events, you're only allowed to have an audience with like enough of a distance between them. And the question really is, will we have a situation in 2021 where we can get the calendar in and all the different tracks in, or will it be another like special year for Formula One, isn't it? I mean, we can talk about the newly released calendar for the rest of 2020 in a moment, but what do you think about next year? Of course, it's speculation, right?
Yeah, I think it'll be fine. Well, first off, of course, the paramount thing is the safety of everybody. And I think F1 has proven that its bubble works, especially considering there was a breach, you know, with Sergio Perez testing positive, and you know that could have derailed the thing so quickly, because you know I know he did come into contact with team members, but thankfully none of them tested positive. But you know, if they tested positive, they could pass it on to someone else, and then the whole thing just falls apart. And I guess that was one of the biggest questions that F1 was facing with its bubble. You know, if someone did test positive, how could they eliminate it? How could they make sure that it doesn't spread? And they did it pretty well, considering the circumstances. And I guess for F1, it's a much bigger challenge, let's say, compared to other sports. You know, like, let's say the NBA, for example, their bubble is currently in Orlando, Florida. All 30 NBA teams are there, and no one leaves the bubble. If you do leave, you have to quarantine when coming back in for a number of days. You know, that's all situated in the one area, whereas F1, it's very difficult because you're traveling all around the world to many different continents. And F1 this year was kind of thrown into the deep end very, very quickly. You know, there was discussions over whether the season would happen as the virus spread more and more. And yeah, just F1, you said that we'll talk about the upcoming races or the newly confirmed races soon, but we do have 17 confirmed races, and for F1 to do that in this year is, you know, incredible. And I think going forward, F1, the FAA, will have a lot more time to evaluate everything, to consider everything, and they will also have the data and the knowledge of how it made this year's bubble well work so far. We still have another 11 races to go, but you know, if they continue to do the things the way they're currently doing, it should all be fine, and they can use that to keep it going next year and have a more normal looking calendar, I guess you could say. Although I must admit, I do quite like some of the tracks we have on this year's calendar, and I do quite like having 17 races. I like a calendar that has 17, 18, maximum 19 races. I think it's quite nice. Only thing I don't is the...
Yeah, that part is nice, but it's not so nice that all those 17 races are within half a year.
Yeah, that's what I mean. I don't quite like the triple headers, but that's not going to be the case next year. I imagine next year they should be able to run a February or a March to November, December calendar. But then that also does throw up the question also, because the races now, you have three races in a row, people, you know, everyone travels home, three races in a row, they travel home. Next weekend, I wonder if it will be a bit more complex if there's a race every second weekend and you have much more trips going home. Because you'll have a race weekend, a trip home, a race weekend, a trip home, a race weekend, a trip home. I wonder if that will complicate things, but who knows? I mean, the whole coronavirus situation, we don't really know what will happen with it in, this time next year. Maybe we'll have a treatment and vaccine for it, you know, if we can only hope. And that would, of course, make things a lot simpler. But all I'll say is the FAA is not, and F1 is not taking chances. They're being very careful with this whole thing. There's a lot at stake with it, which is why it was so important for the season to get underway anyway this year, despite the current situation. But I know I went on a bit of a ramble there, but I think this should be fine for next year.
Yeah, and talking of those newly confirmed races for the back end of the calendar for 2020, well, we do have the Turkish GP confirmed to go ahead, and a race where we've been. When was actually the last race that we did there? 2011?
10?
11.
Maybe I'm not quite sure. It was one of those years, anyway.
Yeah, no, I think it was 11. I think I saw an onboard lap of Vettel, and I think that was the 11 car that I saw. Yeah, 11 could be. A track with, of course, a moment between Vettel and Webber. Plenty of people will remember where the two teammates collided. And we had some good races in the last couple of years. Of course, the famous turn 8 with basically 4 corner apexes to the left, but I guess in 2020 car spec, these turns will be flat, even maybe in race mode, I guess, with that much downforce on the cars. But generally, good to have a new, or in this case old, track back on the calendar with the Nürburgring, with like Imola and Mugello and all the races.
Yeah, definitely. I don't really have too many memories of Turkey on F1 or in F1. I definitely don't have much memories of Imola. I think their last race was like 2006, and I guess I would have been, I guess I would have been 7, 8 years old at the time. And Turkey, I can briefly remember, but it seems like such a long time ago when it was actually on the calendar. Cool to see it back. Of course, though, that triple left-hand corner is definitely the most famous part of the circuit. Like you said, it's probably going to be pretty simple in these cars, considering, we saw at Silverstone that in some of those corners, like Copse and Maggots Beckett, Stowe, how quickly the cars were taking them. This sequence in Turkey should be pretty simple, but at the same time, it'll be spectacular to see the cars go through that track anyway. And definitely looking forward to having I know it's not a new track, but let's say a different track to what we're normally used to. We've kind of gotten out of the way of all the traditional circuits or circuits that we've been used to. Now we're now, I guess, sort of moving into the territory of with Mugello and Imola and Portugal all coming up. It's really exciting. It's nice to be excited for something this year and look forward to it, even though the races might be a bit boring on some of the tracks where overtaking is difficult. I think we could still get a bit of racing in Turkey. I know the some parts of the track might allow for a bit of racing, but it's definitely going to be really, really cool to see the cars around there.
Absolutely. And talking of spectacular tracks, we do have the Belgian GP coming up, of course, with famous corners and most famously Eau Rouge, but also Pouhon, a great corner. It will be interesting to see whether they take it flat out. I guess they will with this year's downforce configurations. And interesting race in Spa ahead, but I guess we won't see many big surprises there. Pecking order will probably be similar to what we had in the last couple of races. One thing maybe we can briefly talk about is the engine mode situation. There has not been a technical directive for the Belgian GP, if I understood it correctly, but it is thought to come in for the Italian GP. Is that correct?
Yeah, that's right. So the it was originally proposed that it would be in Belgium, but it's been delayed until Monza next weekend. It kind of just gives the teams a bit more time to prepare for that. I guess it might make the things a bit closer in qualifying. It might potentially cause further damage in the race. We'll have to wait and see. But it's looks like it's coming for Monza out of all circuits, which is like the ultimate power circuit in F1. And I'd be really curious to see what margin Mercedes would have over everyone else at Monza. If they still had that party mode there, but it definitely for Belgium, they should be pretty much at the head of the field. I don't think Red Bull are expecting to challenge them very much. Although there is supposedly a bit of rain around, so maybe that could you know, mix things up. But I mean, if all things go, you know, smoothly weather-wise, it should be a pretty dominant weekend from Mercedes, and one where they'll have to enjoy their qualifying party mode. Because in Monza, it looks like it will be they won't be allowed to use it. So yeah.
Yep. So let's hope for an interesting qualifying and also an interesting race in Spa. I'm really looking forward to it. Until next week. Goodbye.
Goodbye.